Hi, this is Peter Sagal. For 20 years, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me has been making fun of the news with comedians and celebrity guests. We got silly limericks. We got terrible impressions. If you think the news is a joke, wait till you hear our show. New podcast episodes are available every Saturday.
Hi, this is Luis Perez, songwriter, musician with Los Lobos. It seems like it was just a day ago when I was riding my Schwinn Stingray bike around the streets of my busy neighborhood of East Los Angeles, singing along with the songs playing on the red plastic transistor radio that was taped to the handlebars.
That blue bicycle has taken Luis Perez and Los Lobos on a musical journey to lands near and far. Working with his writing partner, bandmate, and childhood friend David Hidalgo, Perez now has a songwriting catalog that stretches back over 40 years. From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras, and this week we're going to feature a new book called Good Morning Aztlan, The Words, Pictures, and Songs of Luis Perez. And to do that, we're going to try something a little different. You're not going to hear much from me. Instead, we're going to let Luis Perez tell us his story, talk about the songs, and his sources of inspiration. We're going to hear lots of music, some you know, and other hidden gems from their vast catalog of original music. And we'll also feature some dramatic readings of short stories, prose, and philosophical observations that Luis Perez has written and are included in the book. Good Morning Aztlan collects the characters, stories, hopes, and dreams, as well as the tragedies of life, as seen by a composer who filters it all through the perspective of a bicultural Chicano identity that many of us recognize as our own reality. And maybe that's why the band plays such an important role in the history of Latin music in this country, while at the same time reflecting a humanity that transcends culture and country. Okay, we're going to start at the beginning. An 8-year-old kid in East Los Angeles discovering the power of the written word.
When I was real young, I grew up without a father. He passed away when I was 8 years old. So I didn't have the typical childhood or the person that you kind of model yourself after. So I retreated into my head, and I always enjoyed drawing and reading. But I was always interested in the word and interested in looking at things, too. So that had a kind of profound effect on me as I was a kid, just knowing that there's something that you can do with your thoughts and pour them into sentences and make things out of them. My first experiences with writing was songs. I was interested in reading, and that dovetailed into listening to music, because there was always music around the house. My mother listened to rancheras like all day long. On weekends, occasionally we'd take a ride on the 26 bus that took us into downtown LA, across the river from East Los Angeles, and go to these Mexican variety shows, Variedades, at the Million Dollar Theater. And my first experience with live music was sitting in the audience and looking on stage at a mariachi that it looked like there was 40 of them up there. And then they play this big fanfare, and the main star of the show would come out on horseback with a microphone, singing from horseback. It was like surreal. You know, it was like a Salvador Dali moment kind of thing. When I got old enough to reach the knob on the radio on the counter of my mom's kitchen, I discovered choice, and I flipped the stations and discovered rock and roll, rhythm and blues and soul. As I listened more and more to music, I realized that there was obviously the lyrical component. And I listened to that. Smokey Robinson was probably the person that impressed me the most as far as the lyrical part of songwriting. Then after that, of course, it was Bob Dylan and .. all of the above. So I started writing things on paper. I started writing short little poems that I could hear as songs. I met up with David Hidalgo. We were off and running with music then.
Like the songwriting teams of Lennon and McCartney and Jagger and Richards, Luis Perez and David Hidalgo first met at a very early age.
Even David, and I was already starting the 11th grade, I believe. When he came in, we both happened to be taking art class, and he sat right across from me. And we'd start talking, just like kids do, trying to avoid having to listen to the teacher. And we started talking about music. By then, I was well into, like, you know, rock and roll. I was 15 years old when I begged my mom to let me go to see Jimi Hendrix at the Hollywood Bowl. So I sat there in the audience. You know, it cost all of $6.50 for, like, a third row seat. Jimi Hendrix came on stage, and I can almost feel all my brain cells get rearranged at that moment. So by the time I met David, I was well into music, and he listened to a lot of music too, and we had similar interests, which were a little bit eclectic. So it kind of clicked. We started talking more about it. Before long, I went over to his house one day for about a year, and we listened to music, and we would borrow gear from other musicians. We'd tell them that, you know, come on down and we'll jam, and then we'd play around for a while, and they'd leave, and we said, no, leave your gear, leave your equipment, you know, you're coming back tomorrow. And we would use our gear, and we'd make, you know, little recordings, and we started writing songs together then. And that was probably right after he got out of high school, and I was already out for about a year. The rest of Los Lobos, David Hidalgo, Connor Lozano, Cesar Rosas, myself, we all went to Garfield High School, James A. Garfield High School in East Los Angeles. And we knew each other because we were all musicians. We were playing in bands, doing that sort of thing. And out of high school, we were still friends hanging out. And then what happened was when Los Lobos formed, Cesar Rosas and another friend, Frank Gonzalez, started playing traditional Mexican music for reasons I still to this day don't know. And they invited us over. We started playing. We started learning traditional Mexican songs, which became very fascinating for all four of us because we realized that as rock and roll kids, you know, we figured that the entire universe, musical universe, was centered around rock and roll. And we realized that, wow, this is complicated music. It was challenging, and that was what kept us coming back for more. At that point, we took off. It was Los Lobos was the mothership. This is all we wanted to do. It put songwriting on hold for a while. No pretendo ser tu dueño. No soy nada, yo no tengo vanidad en mi vida. Soy tan pobre que otra cosa puedo dar. Pasarán más de mil años, muchos más. Yo no sé si tengamos la eternidad, pero allá tal como aquí. Y en la boca llevarás sabor a mí. And now the first bit of dramatic reading from the book Good Morning, Aztlan, a very short story written by Louis Bettis called Margie's Heart.
How do you go on living when a chunk of your heart appears to be gone? There were pieces of a broken heart scattered around the yard in front of Margarita's house. It didn't look like Margie had made it through the screen door last night with all her vital organs intact. It was quite a messy scene. Something started swelling inside her chest months ago when she first met Raul at Maldonado's mini-mart by the cemetery on Downey Road. He seemed so right, and so terribly wrong when she first eyed him from top to bottom. But it was the sound of his voice that was like a beautiful bolero playing in her ears that convinced her heart to beat to the rhythm of his song. But soon after dances were danced, kisses were kissed, hands were held, and promises exchanged. He left. She waited and waited, but he never returned. So here we are, John, Lucha, Elena Rios, and Paul, on her lawn, picking up pieces of her poor, broken corazón. After 2 hours of searching through the weeds, we were lucky to find almost all the parts, except for one. Margarita Consuelo Chavez would have to go on through her life with that one piece missing.
In 1984, Los Lobos released their first full-length album called How Will the Wolf Survive? And going into the studio to record that album, Louis Bettis had some big decisions to make.
When it was time for us to write songs for that record, I had to make a decision. The first EP was a party record. It was a good time record. There was covers. It was Norteños. There was a couple of original songs on there that Dave and I wrote, and Cesar Rosas también. But this was a time when it was, you know, we had come to the big show. It was time for us to really take a look at what we wanted to do. And as a songwriter, I came to that fork in the road. is this band going to become just cool, good time band? Or is it going to go in a direction of really doing something that meant something? And for me, it felt like there was no choice. There was no option but to follow that course of writing music and songs that represented who we were, not just as a band, but where we come from, who we represent, taking responsibility in that way. So as a result of that, Will the World Survive happened. And I think more importantly, one of the important songs on that record was A Matter of Time, which was the first time that I addressed what had been all around me growing up. The migration of Mexican people into the United States was my mother crossed the border in El Paso when she was just a young girl. So that was an important subject for me because it was all around me. And that's when A Matter of Time happened. It was about a man crossing the border, leaving his family to find a better life.
Speak softly, don't wake the baby. Come and hold me once more before I have to leave. Yeah, there's a lot of work out there. Everything will be fine. And I'll send for you, baby. Just a matter of
You're listening to Alt Latino and an interview with Luis Perez of Los Lobos. Let's do another quick dramatic reading from the book, Good Morning, Aztlan.
The Valley, the food on our table from the work of human hands. In ancient times, to a place so far away, across the land, where the earth was tough as clay, looked at the hands, looked all around, and they seemed pleased at what they had found. Here in the valley, bread on the table, work through day, hard for as long as we are able. Green is the valley, blue is the night, out of the shadows into the light. They could have gone, but instead they chose to stay, to watch the clouds way up high as they turned to gray. Then through the dark broke a crimson sun, and at that moment they knew their lives had just begun. Here in the valley, bread on the table, work through day, hard for as long as we are able. Green is the valley, blue is the night, out of the darkness into the light.
When I write songs, when I write lyrics, kind of all over the place. And a lot of that comes from reading Langston Hughes to Burroughs to Lorca, Marquez, you know, that sort of thing that just kind of mixes everything together for me. So the styles go all over the place. You know, I'll write a song that it has a narrative, like One Time, One Night, which is a series of vignettes of things happening in America. Maybe they're happening at the same time. Then there's something that is like the song Viking, which is more of a abstract kind of approach to it with these singular lines. The last time I seen Viking was about to show the tattoo with a smash of the bed. It was sweetheart's name, was sweetheart's name. Reason it's called Viking is because this vato from East LA, everybody had like nicknames in the gangs in East Los Angeles, whether it be Spider or Little Man or whatever. But I didn't find it unusual for a cholo to be called Viking. I don't know, maybe there was something about him that you know, somebody said, hey, look at Viking, and how the nickname stuck. So I called him Viking, and then there's references to the tattoos that he has, and the whole theme of the song is that, do you remember Viking? And it's almost like this enigma, something that kind of represents all of that lifestyle, that thing that goes on in the hood. And it was all centered around this one character that became the vehicle for those ideas. Do you remember Viking? I'm often asked, how does the songwriting dynamic work between David Hidalgo and myself? Ideally, we would sit down with a pencil and paper, a guitar, in the same room, and write a song. Matter of time happened that way. Time goes on and becomes becomes a premium. There's not that much time because we're touring, because we need to spend some time with the family. It's always this juggling thing between our career and family, which is, of course, it's the most important thing in our lives. So what happens is that we kind of split up the duties. You know, we can't sit down in the same room. So he'll come up with a musical idea. He'll send it over to me, and I'll think about a piece of a lyric, or I hear something, and, you know, I'm always collecting conversations. You know, I'm always hearing things, and I put those things down. A lot of them sometimes are just like lines. Some are like song titles. But to say that David does the music and I just do the lyrics is, you know, hugely discounting what we do, because we're songwriters. He might come up with the musical part. I might come up with the lyrical part. I might finish the lyric. He might finish the music. But eventually what they do is that they both have to come together. And when they come together, that's when we really start to click as songwriters. We start discussing how it goes, what the intro is, how many verses are going to be. Okay, Lou, you got to go write it a couple more verses. You know, Dave, maybe we can adjust this. Maybe we go into the studio and Dave's going to sing it. I sit there in the control room with a pencil and paper and a lyric sheet, and I'm making adjustments as we go along. And that's just the process of how things can work in a more economical sense. But it works. It works just as well as we're sitting in the same room. But ultimately, we are songwriters, both of us. We put ourselves together eventually and just finish the song. And that's how it all goes down. Good Morning, Asalan was a song that was very last song that we put on this record. We had no idea what we were going to call it or anything, and then Dave said, hey, I got one more song. We were pretty much wrapped up, and we got back up and running, fired up the machines in the studio, brought everybody back in, and we started to put this thing down. And I don't know, just something crossed my mind. It sounded like, wow, okay. I heard it in my head. It said, Good Morning, Asalan. And I went home with that idea, and I said, okay, Good Morning, Asalan, what does that mean? Okay, it's the morning of the day and the life of the barrio in East Los Angeles. Good Morning, Asalan, everything's waking up. The kids are getting dressed, going out to school. Dad's got to drop off, you know, his chavo over at the school before he's late to work. The mom's doing dishes, and the dishes are stacked up from ceiling to floor. I mean, that was just one of the lines I used, And all of this stuff is happening, and it's Good Morning, Asalan. It's almost like a creation myth. Everything is being created in the barrio according to their own sensibilities.
You're listening to Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras, and we're taking a deeper dive into the book Good Morning, Asalan, which is a beautiful collection of Los Lobos lyrics going back over 40 years. While in the middle of a writing session, Luis Perez says his wife Mary put a card on his desk. It was from the St. John of God School for Special Children, and he wrote the song Little John of God. Here's a reading of that lyric.
He can't run. He can't play. He does things in a different way. Little John of God. He tries to speak, but no one hears. A little boy's pains and a little boy's fears. Little John of God.
Oh my God.
He's come to us from up above to touch our hearts with special love. With special love, little John of God. You can say with your eyes what others only say inside. Little John of God.
He's come to us from up above to touch our hearts with special love. You can say with your eyes what others only say inside. Little John of God. Little John of God. Little John of God.
This book isn't really about me. It's not something that it's made to flatter myself. And I was having this whole problem with this, and to begin with, I kind of thought that it was kind of self-indulgent until I saw everything out in front of me. And I realized that it's about us. The songs, I looked at them. This is really all about everything that I've seen around me, and I'm just kind of trying to tell the truth about it. I recently heard an interview with Ice-T, this song about his growing up and all the things that he went through, and looking at his life and related to the work and the songs that he writes. And he said, you know, I never had to make up anything. And that really rang like a church bell in my head. I said, yeah, that's it. That's what it is. That's what I'm looking at right here. I'm not making anything up. This is all the stuff that I saw around me. These are all the things that made me sad, made me happy, made me cry, made me laugh. It's all right here. And it's not about me. It's about everybody. And I'm not just talking about the Mexican-American experience. It's about everyone. That's one thing that I approached as a songwriter. I wanted to write something that was universal. What I experienced when I saw America and I saw all of those different parts and how they all fit together, and they all fit together because they all had a commonality and a something that made them all alike. That's the way I approach things. I wanted to drive that home in the songs that I wrote. So everything I approached in that way, so that people can interpret it into their own lives, no matter what color you are, no matter what, you know, if you got antennas and you're living on Mars. It just, we're all the same kind of people, no matter what, okay? And that's the approach that I took to writing songs. And that's how I've approached things. And that's as a result of all these different experiences I've had.
The book is called Good Morning Aztlán, The Words, Pictures, and Songs of Luis Pérez. It's published by the Chucha Press, a project of Tia Chucha's Centro Cultural. All proceeds from the sale of the book and an accompanying CD will go right back into the Tia Chucha Cultural Center. Many thanks to our friend Marisa Arbona Ruiz, who got to flex her acting chops this week with the readings from the book. Okay, what is your favorite Los Lobos song and why? Reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter. We are NPR's Alt Latino. We're going to close with one of my favorite Los Lobos tunes. This is Saint Behind the Glass from their landmark album, Kiko, featuring a very rare lead vocal by Luis Pérez. I'm Felix Contreras, and as always, thank you for listening.
Watches me sleep, watches me sleep, Saint Behind the Glass, watches me while I sleep. Behind the glass, smells gone.